People ask us about like our scale and size, and obviously we are a very large part, very large credit union. But at the end of the day, I don't think members care how big you are. I think they care about what your service looks like. When they have a problem, can you help solve their problem? Are you there for them 24 by 7? When they need you, do you pick up the phone? That's what they care about.
Welcome to 22 Minutes in Lending, your go-to podcast for insights on all things lending. From lending practices, regulatory updates, how to enhance lending efforts, and more. In each episode, Vince Passione connects with industry leaders to discuss the latest trends and happenings around the lending industry. Let's dive into the latest in lending.
Welcome, everyone, to 22 Minutes in Lending. I'm your host, Vince Passione, and I'm excited to welcome Dave Ledwell, Senior Vice President of Consumer and Business Lending at Navy Federal Credit Union. Dave has over 30 years of experience in banking and lending, having held leadership positions at Chevy Chase Bank and HSBC prior to joining Navy Federal Credit Union in 2009. Dave currently manages the team at Navy Federal responsible for personal loans, commercial loans, and the largest direct auto lending origination business in the credit union industry. So without further delay, let's jump right into these 22 minutes in lending. Dave, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks, Vince. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on your show.
Excellent. So Dave, look, we had Tony Battelle on from Origins recently on the podcast, and he's running the largest indirect lender. He's basically the largest indirect lender in the industry today in the credit union space. And he's basically done this over 20 years. He's helped credit unions generate about $420 billion in loans. That's about $2 billion a month in aggregate over time.
Yeah.
Now, based on our conversations, Navy is doing about $2 billion a month in direct lending. Now, assuming the average used car price is $27,000, that's about 70,000 cars you're financing a month. So how do you drive that kind of loyalty amongst your membership base?
Well, we have been very fortunate, and I've gotten to know Tony over the last few months, and what a great guy he is. I really admire the work he's doing in the indirect space.
Yep.
There's no short and simple answer, but I think that what we always, our bedrock is always member service. So we try to keep it simple for our members. And we have 13.5 million members, and they are very loyal to Navy Federal. And we just try to keep it simple for them. We answer their questions very succinctly. When they have problems, we try to solve them. When they want to buy a car, we try to make the finance process very easy and quick. And basically, if we're competitive and we're easy to use, members will use us, and that's paid out for us.
So now, we've had this conversation about relationship recognition and the impact it has when you're pricing an auto loan for a member. Can you take us through what that means and what's the difference between sort of relationship pricing versus relationship recognition?
Yeah, so there are relationship pricing models that are out there that, if you do this, you get this. We don't really have that kind of model. However, we do have custom models that we've built. Part of the attributes that have been embedded in those models has to do with how you've done with us, how long you've been a member with us, what kind of products you take, and how you performed. All of those things sort of add up to a better risk profile and a better experience. It's sort of like we want to take advantage of the fact that we know you. We know the member.
And now we've also had this conversation, which is so now your member is walking in with this loan that they have from Navy, right? And please, if I have the process wrong, correct me. But they're walking in, and typically they might be walking in with a bank draft, or they're going to call you once they find the vehicle. And having spent time in the dealership at my days at DealerTrack, they're going to wind up in the F&I office at some point, and the dealer has every incentive to try to take that deal and flip it. So how do you avoid that happening? And do you give instructions to the member? And how do you deal with that whole situation where you've now lost ball control, right? You've got the member, he's got the loan, but now that he or she's got the loan, now they've got to go in and we've got to close.
Yeah. So, it's not that we prevent that from happening all the time, but to be honest with you, it's trust. The whole thing's about trust. Members trust us. And so we have the majority of our members come to us and get their loan approved before they ever go to the dealership. So they'll come to us, and if they know what they're going to buy, we can do it that way. Or if they're just going to go shopping, we could pre-approve them for just a fixed amount. And so when they go to the dealership, they're empowered and they know that. And we tell members, hey, look, if you're getting a 0%, we can't beat 0% or a 1.9. If you can get that deal, take that deal. And then, after a while, we're going to try to refi that and give them a little money to come with us anyway.
So, Dave, why do you think more credit unions don't do business this way? Because the majority of credit unions, A, are indirect as opposed to your direct business. And B, the idea of relationship pricing, right? Even a dealer, right? You can go on Dealertrack, I guess, and put a scorecard up and do relationship recognition somehow. But is it systemic? Is it philosophical? Or are they doing it and we just don't know because the dealer now has the deal in hand and is getting compensated?
Well, people go indirect. I think a lot of times I started off the indirect business, and so people go the indirect route to get application flow. And so, if you're a small credit union, you don't feel like you can get enough application flow out of your own base, then that's a way to get volume. We're fortunate in that we're big enough that we can get all the volume that we want from our dealer base. So we really don't need the dealer to perform the application flow story for us. We get our application flow.
Right.
We like the direct model because we have a direct relationship with our members and they have a relationship with us. And we're very fortunate that we're able to do that. I think that the barriers to for everybody to do that is just how much flow can you get out of your member base? For large credit unions, it's a little easier for, but it's very tempting for people just to hook up with the setup that's already there, which is indirect. I mean, after all, but probably 95% of the deals that are all the deals that are settled in the United States are settled indirect. So
Right.
it's the lower volume, for sure, and to be able to set it up and have somebody else sort of work on marketing the customers, and then you just have to compete for the business. We understand that model, but we like the direct model a lot better.
So now I was looking at your 5300 report, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like current portfolio is about $30 billion outstanding on direct auto.
Yes, a little bit. Yep, right at
So that's
that.
about double since the pandemic. So how much of that was due to increased sales versus car values going up?
Well, there's a bit of both. I mean, obviously car values went up a lot, but we made a decision right when COVID hit. We decided to lean in and get some share, quite frankly, because we were thinking that the business was going to go for a while and then shut down because the economy was shutting down. Well, so we leaned in, we dropped rates, and we picked up some share. Well, what happened was our members never stopped buying cars. It was crazy a little bit, and so we were able to we dropped our rates, we got share, and we just kept chugging. So we grew by double digits all through COVID, and we had a 2 or 3 years of pretty remarkable growth. So on top of that, cars were more expensive. We were financing more, but not as much as you would have thought, because members were also very liquid during that time, and so they were actually putting more money down than usual. So we did finance more as our LTVs to go up, but not 30 or 40%, and they've actually started to come down again. So although we did do elevated LTVs for a while, that's sort of abated, and we're back. I wouldn't say normal, but we're back closer to normal. It's not back to where it was, and maybe it never gets back to where it was, but we were pretty comfortable where we sit as far as LTVs.
This is Kara Van Wert, Chief Lending Officer at Viridian Credit Union. Since 2016, we've been working with LendKey and joined the Member Student Lending CUSO to help provide student loan solutions to our members. As the current CUSO board chair, I'm proud of the CUSO LendKey partnership, as this has allowed Viridian to help over 12,000 of our credit union members finance their education and improve their financial health. LendKey's streamlined processes simplifies the lending experience, making it easier for our members to access the financial support they need.
So I was looking at some Manheim data, and to your point about what's happening on pricing, and basically it was showing what the dealers paid on a used car this past April at the auction versus last April. And they said they saw almost a 14% reduction year over year, April to April. And then obviously you talked about it, right? Roughly 20% of new vehicle sales, right, involving a trade, they've got negative equity now. And I saw some data from Edmunds, and they were saying, look, the average amount of negative equity being rolled forward by the consumer is about $6,000. So this becomes a real challenge. And I think we're sort of at record levels, I think, when it comes to negative equity. So how do you as a lender adjust your underwriting given what's happening? Because it's going to work its way through the system. And we saw this in 2001, 2002 in the leasing right. business. And you right. you were there.
Yeah,
but
right.
what do you do to protect the lender? What do you do to protect the member?
Yeah, this is an issue that we see. You know, really there's only a couple ways to actually get through this negative equity situation. People really need to keep their cars longer, and they need to pay it through. What's happening is people are increasingly taking out, you know, 72 months is the new 60. When I started, 48 months was the deal, right? That was average. Now it's 72, about 45% of the business we do is 72 months. And about 15% is 96-month financing. Now, cars last longer than they used to, and they're more expensive. People are always searching for a payment. You know, everybody buys a car, they're looking for payment. The issue is that people are, you know, taking 72-month and 84-month loans, and they're keeping the car 3 years. So you're never going to pay your loan, you know, you're never going to pay your car off or get rid of any negative equity that you bring in doing it that way. So, you know, members need to, all of our members, you know, they need to eventually pay those loans down.
You mentioned something about you got to stay in the car longer, and then you get into issues of delinquencies, and delinquencies are up, right? We're seeing they're up this half by about 20 basis points, which is kind of frightening. And then if you ever have to go after that vehicle and repossess it, now you've got, you as the lender are going to deal with this residual value concern. But you're saying even in light of that, you won't modify your underwriting just yet.
No, we're not seeing that. In general, our loans perform better than average. That's the affinity that we've built up every year with our members. So we see it. But, you know, also over the last few years, because used prices have been up at auction, we've actually been able to get more at auction for repos than normal. So there's a plus and a minus side to all of that.
So we've also had the conversation recently about auto refi. And is a auto refi a way to solve the negative equity issue?
Maybe indirectly. I mean, we have a big refi program, and we try to, it's about 15% of the business that we do, car business that we do. We generally can get people a better rate, which will reduce the payment. That doesn't really solve the negative equity issue. There's really no substitute for just paying the car off, you know, or mm-hmm. paying it down, keeping it longer, paying right. it down, just getting through the curve so that you're starting to build equity in the car. Really no substitute for that. But we do save a lot of members. You know, they'll go in, they'll go to a dealership, maybe they can come to us, and we see members that have sometimes 18, 20% rates, you know, really crazy rates. But we're usually able to save significant money on the rate, on their monthly payment. And so that's why we do a lot of refi business.
So another big conversation we've been having is EVs, right? It's everywhere in the press. The growth is good, right? The sales grew by about 50% through 2023. But we've seen, you know, some of the residual values flip around, especially given the fact that Tesla has changed pricing a few times. So how should credit unions approach this market given the volatility that's existed in the past when it comes to pricing?
Yeah, it's the EV market is very interesting. And of course, being led by a very interesting fellow who tends to be very mercurial and changes mind a lot. So I think we're trying to meet the members' need. Members want to drive EVs and hybrids, and we have elected to finance those just like we finance anything. There might be a little bit more collateral risk in those. We'll see how that goes. That's sort of an unknown. You know, what happens when the batteries start to wear out? What happened? You know, how do people value EVs 5 years from now? Sort of an unknown, but we're going to go on that journey with our members. We do a lot of EV financing.
So step away from Navy for a minute, just looking at the EV market and what Tesla's done. They've gone down a different distribution model, right? The entire car industry is based on this independent franchise dealer to basically distribute the manufacturer's product for them. And there have been others in the industry in the past who have made statements about, does this model work? Does this model make sense? And dealers are obviously extremely sensitive, right? That's their entire business, is taking this manufacturer's product and then turning around and selling it for them. But Tesla's crossed the line. They've started off from the beginning saying they're not going to use that model, right? They are directly distributing their own product. Do you think that the industry is going to change? Do you think we're going to see Ford and other U.S. auto manufacturers follow the Tesla lead?
Well, that's a very interesting question. You see, I just remember reading about Amazon. Amazon's getting into the auto business. They've made some arrangements with Hyundai and maybe a couple of others to distribute cars. The thing about the dealer is that, it's one thing to talk about the sale. I think manufacturers would say, "Hey, we can sell cars direct. We don't need a dealer to do that." But really, it's the life of the car, the service. That's the body work, all the stuff that happens after the sale. That's really where a dealership makes most of their money, not on the sale itself. So, is there room for a hybrid model where manufacturers sell direct, but all the servicing remains with the dealership? Manufacturers don't service, with the exception of Tesla. They have service assistance centers. But manufacturers don't service. So are they willing, what are they willing to do? And I will tell you, I have a lot of empathy for dealers. I mean, we're a direct model, but I grew up in the indirect business. And those dealers have invested millions of dollars in these dealerships. And they're small business people, and I have an affinity towards small business people, as you know. I think, it's like everything else. It's got to evolve some way. I mean, I don't think 50 years from now it'll be the same. Is there a room for a hybrid solution? I hope so, because the dealers, they're vital pieces of the community. I'd hate to see them go away. And I don't think they will. I think that people want to shake hands with a person. They want to kick the tires. They call it kicking the tires for a reason. People like doing that. And I don't think that you can mass market cars in the United States without having boots on the ground. I think that's a dealership.
So let's switch off cars, although you and I could probably talk about cars all day. Let's talk a little about fintech and embedded finance. So lots of big buzzwords in the industry, right? Everybody's talking about embedded finance, right? They're looking at, hey, you get your Uber and you never have to take money out of your pocket. You get paid automatically. And now LendingClub's announced that they have plans for embedded finance. They announced in the last earnings call, and Stripe is going to be decoupling its payment service so it can be a provider of infrastructure for that. And then you got millennials, like 80% of them are shopping and purchasing online, which is up very significantly, almost 33% in the last 5 years. So when you think about, your tenure at the credit union, even when you're at the bank, I mean, what does this mean to the credit union system, right? Both in the short term and the long term? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing?
Well, is it good or bad? It's a thing, right? So it is disintermediation, right? This is the way it is now. People like the convenience of buying online. They love the convenience of having the finance piece be a seamless part of their transaction. They love the fact that they can defer payments, and they love the fact that sometimes it doesn't cost them anything, So this is here to stay. The question for financial institutions is, how do you adapt to this new world? Because it's, we always say here, we can't live in the museum. Well, the museum is different now. It's different. So there's opportunity though, as there always is. And maybe partnering with retailers, partnering with people who are doing embedded finance. The embedded finance is probably the next big gold rush for someone. And if it's going to be financial institutions, they just got to be adaptable, and they got to be listening to their members.
Dave, Navy Federal really relies on one of the big strengths is service, right? Service to the member. Do you think that embedded finance for your business proposition is sticky enough? Because isn't it episodic? Like, okay, I'm driving my new Uber. I'm going to pay for my car ride, or I'm at the store and I'm going to make a payment. Do you think that it's top of mind that if Navy were there and you had your embedded platform there at the point of sale, that it's top of mind, or is it not sticky and almost it's pushing the brand of the retail in front, and now you're sitting not even the back. I mean, I don't even know that they see you there.
Yeah, that is true. It's very transactional. So our whole business is not based on transactional relationships. And we're based, we want to be the trusted advisor. So I think that what we have tried to do is educate members about what this means and how it works and how, what to look out for. So I think in the long run, the opportunity is for education. The opportunity is to make yourself relevant to your young members, especially by being there to talk about the old nuts and bolts about how you build wealth, which is, it's what we learned when we were kids, probably, but it's, save a little bit, spend less than you make, pay your credit cards off. Funny for a bank to be saying that, but it's true. It's the financial health of the member we're talking about. That is time trusted advice and still the same advice today. It's just, getting to our young members to get them to listen to that about budgeting, things like that. They need that information, whether they know it right now or not. All that stuff is still true and still relevant today. So it's all about relevance and education and listening.
So what about the smaller credit unions? What do they do to stay relevant?
People ask us about like our scale and size, and obviously we are a very large part, very large credit union. But at the end of the day, I don't think members care how big you are. I think they care about what your service looks like. So small credit unions, mid-sized credit unions, if you're focused on serving your member and listening to them and trying to be relevant to what they've got going on and you're responsive to them, I think that people don't care whether you're, $7 billion in assets or $700 million or 170 billion. Well, they don't even know that. What they know about is when they have a problem, can you help solve their problem? Are you there for them 24 by 7? When they need you, do you pick up the phone? That's what they care about. And so I think that credit unions are of all, and for that matter, community banks, banks, all have an opportunity, but you have to be responsive and listen to the member. And that's what we really tried to do is put the member first, keep that as our North Star, and service them heavily, invest in service.
Well put, Dave. I'm going to leave it there, right? I think investing in the member, paying attention to the member, doing everything you guys have done all these years to create an amazing franchise. So it's a great story. Thanks for sharing it. And that wraps up our 22 minutes in lending. Dave, thanks again for taking the time with us today. Thanks as always to our listeners, and don't forget to subscribe so you can enjoy future episodes. And I'll meet you back here at our next 22 minutes in lending. Dave, thanks again.
Thanks. Thank you, Vince. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the 22 Minutes in Lending podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. You'll find links to any resources mentioned in the show notes. If you're enjoying our show, be sure to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review.